I am a mountain. I am a tall tree. Oh, I am a swift wind sweeping the country. I am a river down in the valley. Oh, I am a vision and I can see clearly. If anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, I'm that star up in the sky, I'm that mountain peak up high. Hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest. And I'm that little bit of hope, when my back's against the ropes, I can feel it, I'm the world's greatest.
This is Comics Therapy, episode 49. No reviews, just analysis. Up this week, three comics from July 2nd, 2014. Moon Knight number 5, The White Suits number 4, and Sheltered number 10. As always, we have your nerd confessions, and just as a reminder, we never do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers ahead.
Well, hello, Comics Therapy. This is the amazing Spider Brad calling in for my answer, my confession. That is, for best series, my confession is that it is not The Amazing Spider-Man. That is right. And mostly because of Brand New Day. Ugh. My favorite series, which I own every issue and all the trades of, because I like it that much, is Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force. Absolutely loved it. It was one of the comics that really got me super excited about comics in the last few years. I love the way it ended. I love that there wasn't necessarily a win. There were still defeats, the loss of characters, crippled Angel. And then still the mentality of Wolverine just having to get the job done. You know, there's the dirty job of being in the X-Force, and I just absolutely loved it. That right there is my favorite series. I can't get enough of it, and I just wish there was more. Goodbye.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say as serious medical advice. This week's theme is delusions of grandeur. We're looking at characters who think they're untouchable, unstoppable. Yeah, I know, that's a pretty common trait in comics. Heroes and villains with a god complex make up probably a third of the books out there. But it's pretty fucked up when you start to pick it apart. What sorts of things have to be in play to convince an individual that he's all-powerful? And yes, shockingly, all of the delusional characters we're looking at today happen to be male. Go figure.
How dare you.
Hey guys, this is James Kaplan, SinisterJHK on Twitter. And my answer for this week, I had to think about a little bit, but then it came to me, and it is All-Star Superman. This is, I'm pretty sure, my favorite comic of all time, and it's certainly my favorite Superman comic of all time, and he's my favorite character. It has amazing writing from Morrison, and the art from Frank Quitely is peerless, and it's Superman at his best, which is to say he's being heroic, and his compassion for humanity, his love of Lois and his friends is just really wonderful. And it's got so many memorable character beats. I mean, it's got this great humor, great stuff from Samson and Atlas to Jimmy turning into Doomsday, and amazing Lex Luthor stuff, some of the best Lex Luthor comics I've ever read. And it's just wrapped up in this wonderful story, analogous to the 12 Labors of Hercules. And Superman, till his very last moment in the story, is doing everything he can to help humanity, save humanity, help people thrive and achieve their best. And, you know, the moment in issue 10, which is an amazing issue, probably one of my favorite single issues of any comic of all time, where he stops a girl from killing herself, is just, like, if you don't get moved by that scene, then it's, you know, worth looking into. Anyway, it's my favorite book. It's wonderful. I could read it again and again. Thanks.
In between comic segments, your very own nerd confessions, celebrating what we love about comics. This week, we asked you to pick your ultimate favorite comic series ever. A cool task, but you came through. There's probably an analogy to be made here about delusions of power, but you get the idea. Each episode, you can call, Skype, or email your confessions to us. The details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Remember, catharsis is cool.
Hello, comics therapists. This is your pal, Moises. And to pick just one series, of course, is almost impossible. But for me, the easy answer is Transmetropolitan. There are things about Transmetropolitan that at the time seemed kind of ridiculous and are now a part of everyday life. And the way that people live inside their technology are increasingly having it wired into their brains. It predicted things like Google Glass and various others that are tremendously frustrating and annoying to many, and something that others think is just absolutely the only way to live. There are truths in it in some of their one-and-done issues about the notion of the future that we're facing at this point, currently terrifying and thought-provoking. So one of my favorite series, one thing, it's my go-to. I can't even say an honorable mention because you didn't give me the option. You monsters. Thanks for doing a great show, and thanks for being on mine. Take care, guys.
In between shows, you can find me on Twitter, at Andrea Schock, and Aaron, at Aaron Myers, and the show account, at Comics Therapy. Aaron, you're pretty grand, or at least you think you are. How you doing?
I'm doing amazing.
What? Amazing?
Omnipotently amazing.
Wow. Why?
Because it was a great week of comics.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
Very true.
And I got to read a lot of them.
Yeah? Are you done with your pile?
I am done with my pile. I finished it on Wednesday.
Do you always finish it on Wednesday?
I try to. Okay. But I don't always. Okay. Depends on how many there are.
Yeah. I am not done yet.
But you had, what, like 40 to read or so?
No, I don't have anywhere near the number that you do. I actually don't have a
clue.
That's
okay, but you had to work a bunch this week.
I did, so did you.
Hmm.
But I'm not entirely sure how many I read on a regular basis because I just don't pay attention to that.
That's all right. I've always been a numbers man.
I know, and I am not.
No, but because I buy print, it requires, I think, more planning.
I think that's exactly it. And I'm not judging you at all for it. I think it's fine. I'm just saying that, like, if you ask me how many I'm reading on a regular basis, I can tell you titles, but I cannot tell you numbers.
That's interesting, because I could probably tell you numbers, but I couldn't really tell you titles.
How is this at all even remotely surprising?
Well, because I think my numbers are a lot higher than yours.
No, that's not the part that's surprising. It's just the way that we think about it is what is, like, a total given.
I mean, I could list books that I'm reading, but I couldn't list you all the books I'm reading.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you understand my point?
No. It's fine. But I rarely do.
Whatever. Anything else about your week other than comics?
I'm not a fan of summer or fireworks. I apologize to everyone who likes fireworks.
Oh,
but
that's right.
I hate them.
Because of the way that small children and small animals react to them.
Yeah, and I think because of some of my, spectrum tendencies. Guess what? I don't like loud noises.
Mm. Okay.
Which is not good when you have dogs and small children.
Right.
Because there's a lot of that.
Right. I thought that you posted recently that there was some sort of new ordinance in Eugene about fireworks.
Yeah, that.
How's that working out for you?
Right. I don't think it's going to get enforced. I have a feeling.
There are signs up everywhere around here about fireworks because of the drought. So a lot of the communities up and down the peninsula and like all around the Bay Area have canceled their fireworks.
Yeah, but California doesn't have a year-round fireworks allowance either. Like the state of Oregon allows for fireworks to be set off every day of the year.
It's because you're all a bunch of fucking hippies.
I think it's more a bunch of libertarians outside of the cities.
Same difference.
Yeah, but then the fire danger isn't anything like it is in California.
Right.
But Eugene itself, as a city ordinance, passed it that you can only do it the day before, the day of, and the day after 4th of July, and the same with New Year's.
So has it been bad today?
Not during the day, no. It'll get bad tonight.
Mm, okay.
And, typically it's fireworks season, like the week, 2 weeks before 4th of July up until maybe, the beginning of October.
Right.
And not an exaggeration, like every night there will be somebody firing off fireworks.
Wow.
There are several houses in the neighborhood that are like, I don't know why the ATF doesn't like raid their houses.
You know why that is? Because there's nothing to do there.
There's plenty to do here. Do you know how many comic book stores we have?
Yep. Yep. So you go to the comic book stores during the day and you shoot off fireworks at night.
I don't think it's the same people.
You don't?
I mean, not that there's anything to exclude those circles from overlapping. I just don't
I think bet it there's is. More of an overlap than you think.
Yeah, possibly true. I don't think the ordinance is going to change anything in my neighborhood, but it's nice to know it's there just when you're trying to put your son who got woken up by somebody sending off an M80 or something in the neighborhood back to sleep.
Keep on fighting the good fight, Aaron Myers.
Yeah, just want to build my underground bunker.
You sound old.
I am.
Like super old, super like get off my lawn, like.
Yeah.
It's just fireworks, dude.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, is it? It sounds like it's just fireworks.
Do people set them off around your house?
In Pittsburgh, they did.
Yeah, but you were, 19.
What? Really? I was in Pittsburgh 2 years ago.
Oh, so you're 27.
Mm-hmm. You're adorable.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. I'm glad you're not uptight. I am.
Right.
Yeah, and you don't have, I don't know, you're not bothered by, it's okay to be bothered by loud noises. There's nothing really I can change about.
You don't have to get defensive about that. I've got my own issues. You can have loud noises. That's cool. There's not a monopoly on issues.
Good. Well, just add that to my list for the people at least at home.
I already did.
Who are keeping track.
We can play issues bingo. It's going to be great.
And which one do we bring up during the show every week?
Yep.
All right. Well, what about you? What issues have come up this week?
Well, I put Avi on a plane Tuesday morning.
That's an issue or problem solving of some sort.
Yep. So he's gone for about a month.
That's pretty sweet.
You know, there are positives to that I would be lying if I didn't say I was looking forward to. But man, did I cry like hardcore Tuesday morning, which I was not expecting to. It's just that I guess the reality of the situation as we were saying goodbye. And so that was harder than I expected it to be. You know, a month is a really long time.
I think it's harder it's going to vary on situations, but say for our family, I think Chrissy and the kids could go away for a month and I would miss them, but I wouldn't have that same reaction.
See, I was all thinking it was going to be awesome, just going to read a bunch, going to watch a whole bunch of television, and that's going to still happen. But I completely skipped over the transitional, and then Avi's not going to be here part. I actually didn't acknowledge the feelings component to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, sure, I understand your point that you would miss them, but then you would just carry on and it would be fine. I think that the reality of that length of time would affect even you.
I agree, but I think to a different extent than it affects you.
Okay.
And it's not because out of love or caring. I think it's just the mother relationship versus the father relationship.
Nope. It's because you're a robot.
Could be. I don't think so, though. I mean, I guess I'll never know.
Right.
And I can't imagine that actually having that kind of break for any kind of vacation-y sort of, reason happening for me. So it's probably nothing I'll have to ever or get to.
It's not an insurmountable problem, obviously. I'm going to carry on and be just fine. And he arrived in Pittsburgh safe and sound, and he's already on the first of his adventures and is having a great time. So I'm actually already totally fine. But that moment of saying goodbye was a little bit more teary than I had predicted it would be. That's all.
Hmm. All right. That's fine.
Because I'm not a robot.
Do you know that?
Yes.
Hmm.
Definitively.
I don't know about that. Jury's still out. Well, what else do we have to talk about? Do you have anything to apologize for?
Yes.
Good.
A brief regression therapy. And it's all me. So
of course.
I have to admit, though, like, since the first one, I've been kind of on my game.
Mm, okay.
Right? Well, notice how
nobody,
I
nobody's
never...
Nobody's called you out on anything.
That's true. And I never went back and clarified about Rat Queens. So we're probably going to have to revisit that at a future date. But this...
Do we both have to apologize for Rat Queens,
yeah,
or just you?
Yeah, totally. No,
we both do.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But we'll save that for later.
Well, hello there, big boys and girls. This is Katie Rex from the podcast At the End of the Universe, endoftheuniversecomics.com. You can find me on Twitter at EOTUcomics. Do you like to read comics? Do you like to talk about comics? This week's question was, what is your favorite comic series ever? Well, I don't know about you, but mine's Rat Queens. Four fierce, filthy, badass ladies. Sex, drugs, swords, and candy. Plus, possible pubic hair bluebirds and more beard than I can handle. Don't forget to call Comics Therapy every week at 541-357-6922.
Anyway, this new segment is a bit of an editor's note, a chance for us to share some of the things that have come up in response to the previous week's conversation, since sometimes after the show goes up, the discussion continues. And all I really need to acknowledge this week is that I totally failed to post the pictures of Leica and Lion Cat that Nick Patara and I drew last week during the interview. They went up on Twitter on our individual accounts, but not on the Comics Therapy site. And surprisingly, a whole bunch of people called me out on that. So I'm sorry. And by the time you listen to this, they will be up. And, like, really all anybody needs to know is that Nick didn't follow the rules, so we can move on.
But it is true. You fail miserably at keeping our social media stuff up to date, even though you have access to everything up to and including the Twitter account.
I don't have access to the Twitter account. I post all the stuff on Facebook, and I post all of the stuff, or I write all of the stuff for the website, and then you do your, like, uploading games, and that's... you know, what you bring to the table. So I'm not entirely sure what your point is here, except to somehow yet again point out that I could if I wanted to, but you know that I couldn't.
Well, no, you can't even post on Facebook regularly. I mean, come on.
Are you done? Do you want to talk about comics? I was feeling really good. I was, like, missing you a little bit. I was thinking, like, holy shit, it's Thursday and I haven't really talked to Aaron yet. And we read a whole bunch of books this week. And hey, let's talk about comics. Like, throwback Thursday, like the good old days.
You will cry when we hang up. You're going to be crying.
I'm not.
Missing me.
I'm not going to be crying when I miss you.
But you will miss me.
I miss you, like, a little bit before I start to talk to you. And then as soon as I start talking to you, I'm like, fuck, what was I thinking?
That's fair. I mean, that's why we have to do this weekly. So it's a reminder.
As opposed to what? Like, daily or monthly? What's your point?
Or not at all. And then you'd just be, it would be the, you know, the constant longing for that, that which does not exist.
Constant longing.
Mm-hmm.
I did start my official San Diego countdown, though. I will say that because it is now officially July, official, I can be fucking excited about that. So that's, like, a thing from this week that happened that I should warn everybody about, because I've never been there before. So it's entirely possible that my excitement is going to reach previously unreachable levels of obnoxious.
That is actually extra exciting for you, and I'm excited for you in that way, because San Diego's fun, especially if you've never been there before.
Correct.
Like, not just the con, but, like, downtown is fun.
Yeah. So wait, did you just give me permission to be super excited about San Diego?
Yeah, this week. I mean, I'm going to totally, I'll you know, crap on your parade in upcoming shows.
Oh, that was really sweet of you.
Yeah, but I'm going to give it to you this week.
Thanks.
You're emotionally vulnerable.
I am.
You're by yourself.
No, but I will be starting next week.
Anything can happen. You have no one to protect you.
Where are you going with this?
I'm just saying. I'm being empathetic.
Oh, okay. I want you to be excited for me. I don't need your empathy.
I can't really get excited for other people.
You just were. Like oh, good. Play the tape back. You just were.
Well, I'm good. Then it sounded genuine. I'm learning to approximate human emotions better and better every week. This show's really helping me with that.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about comics.
I was just talking about comics. I was talking about, like, the biggest fucking comics event of the year.
Oh, I disagree with that.
Oh, because you're so provincial and, like, Portland-centered.
No, I just think it's the biggest... I would say it is not the biggest comics event of the year anymore. It's the biggest entertainment
media
event of the year.
Sure. Yeah. I'll give you that.
I think comics have been pretty almost marginalized now.
I cannot speak to that as I have never been there, but you can have your opinion and don't take my excitement away from me this week.
All I'm saying is anyone who goes to San Diego now is a poser and a fool. You're not
Aaron
a real
Myers,
fan if you're excited to go to San Diego.
Enough people who hated you on the internet, now we all do.
Good. Well, then we can start the main part of the show.
Okay. Let's talk about comics.
Hello, guys. This is David. Just call because I want to say that my favorite comic series ever is Transformers More Than Meets the Eye. Thank you, guys. You guys are awesome.
Our first book this week is Moon Knight number 5, written by Warren Ellis and drawn by Declan Shalvey. Coloring is by Jordi Belair, and lettering is by Chris Eliopoulos. Moon Knight is published by Marvel Comics.
So I really like the intro that they have on the title page for this new run of Moon Knight. Mercenary Mark Spector died in Egypt under a statue of the ancient deity Khonshu, right? Is that how we're saying it?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Look, I got the names right on the intro. That's as far as it's going to go with me today.
Got it. He returned to life in the shadow of the moon god and wore his aspect to fight crime for his own redemption. He went completely insane and disappeared, and this is what happened next. So I dig this. I think we all do, right? But
yeah.
And they're single issue stories, like all standalone. But I'm really enjoying this particular take on Mark Spector. I think like he seems just so much healthier than he has been. Like, he's channeling his issues in a way that has made him very confident and, like, not as much of a, like, complete basket case. He's kicking ass and taking names, and it's great.
Can we drill into that a little bit, though? Because I think, like, say, compared to, like, the last volume that Bendis wrote,
right,
which, you know, is 12 issues, you have more room to expand the character,
mm-hmm,
than you do with basically issues that have just an A story and no B story.
No B story. Right.
Yeah. So there's not really room to kind of get into much of what's going on in his life or his psyche.
Well,
other than what is, you know, applicable to the storyline of that issue.
Except that you can sort of read between the lines. I mean, he's working officially with the police. He has the respect of his police partners. There's a consistency to what he is doing and the way that he's approaching it that I think you can get a lot from the way that all of that filler is handled. It's not entirely a B story, but I think that we actually have more of a sense of, like, how he's doing mentally than you're implying.
Okay, maybe, yeah. I mean, without explanation, then. You know, with that, yes, he seems to be far more mentally stable than he has in the past. You know, the fractured personalities seem far more cohesive. You know, he's focused on the tasks and seems to have a pretty stable life. But we don't know how he got from Los Angeles, you know, back and found the stability.
Well, he was seeing a therapist. We know that.
Yeah.
And he has like reinforcement about what isn't wrong with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess
that's true. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of confidence that he's demonstrating that is, like, I like it. I like the way that he's still broken and he's still a mess. And he's obviously, like, you know, working alone in the moment. But his, like, other interpersonal connections have been, like, much more positive, I think.
Well, I always liked him as a character because it took a guy who in real life would be a raving, you know, multiple personality schizophrenic who would be probably self-medicating and, you know, homeless on the streets. And, you know, he kind of made this character of who was a problem solver, you know, a superhero who isn't overtaken by those different aspects, mm-hmm. you know, of his psyche, but mm-hmm. uses their strengths in the moment.
Right. But this just seems so much more cohesive. Now.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think the personalities are far more gelled.
Right. And so I feel like that, like, he just seems much stronger and his sense of self is so much greater. And I don't know, it makes it, like, a lot more fun to read him saying things like, you know, when you see me coming,
run.
Yeah. It's fucking rad. I love it.
Yeah, but, you know, because it's a fight comic, too, though. That there's this build up until the very end where mm-hmm. and that's the, you know, the great release. Like, Ellis has always been good at writing those kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, I think it's probably one of people's favorites of the week.
I think there's a lot going on here that sets it apart from not only previous Moon Knight books, but just, like, even the other solo books that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also pretty cool. To see the storytelling approached with this, like, one and done surfacey kind of stuff that just allows everybody involved to have a little bit of fun with it without a B story. I think that's a really good point. Like, we don't know why or how he got to where he is, but I don't, and coming from me always looking for the fucking backstory, like, it doesn't bother me at all. I feel mm-hmm. like there's plenty happening here and it's so minimal and yet so strong, and I think it's great.
Yeah, I think you could almost do these indefinitely. It's just a high standard too. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
You know, if you have that one off issue that people don't gravitate to, it's almost like then everyone dumps it, you know. People are so fickle with runs like this that are like great single stories, but mm-hmm. to do that, you know, over 60 issues is pretty daunting.
Yeah.
And we only get 6 with this creative team, but I think in a way with this style, 6 is a good way to kind of reintroduce the character, if you think of it. You know, you have 6 issues of sort of one-offs that kind of just set the stage for the world he's living back in. And then you could start, you could almost call, you know, number 7, number 1, in a way.
He is pretty untouchable, though, right now.
Mm-hmm.
He is operating at a level of...
kind of untouchable. Like, the ghost story, he got his butt kicked. He had to go back and figure it out.
He did, but he didn't get his butt kicked in a way that deterred him from the end goal. Mm-hmm. And more accurately, in this most recent issue... what was that? 20 guys, something like that, in that building?
Yeah, but that's did you ever watch The Raid?
No.
The Raid is like an action movie that's basically, or even the latest Judge Dredd movie is sort of like this too, where you have a building and it's just level by level fighting your way up to you know, up to the top.
It's great. Actually, the commentary, cuz it was so minimal in terms of the storytelling in any other way but visually, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people talked about that this week. But it was, the pacing was really fantastic with mm-hmm. level to level to level. I don't have a problem with that at all. I'm not saying that there's any kind of difficulty with suspension of disbelief or for anything relating to him.
It's not out of character though.
The whole
reason like he and like a Hawkeye are these guys that are somewhat powerless, but you know, powerful guys is because of their strength of will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that like the whole reason the moon, you know, he's the Moon Knight and the moon god chose him is because of his, you know, of his psyche.
Yeah, but he's still totally delusional.
He is, but that's part of like the curse and the resurrection and everything else. But the core of, I guess it goes back to the core of being, you know, what makes a hero in this way is that it's not, I think comics try to reiterate, even though in practice it's really a might makes right sort of thing. The underlying moral seems to, that they try to express is it's not a matter of being Thor and being powerful enough to like break the earth with your hammer. It's because he's a good person and he has this, you know, his hero strength comes from the core of his self.
Right.
You know, which maybe in issue by issue isn't so true, but I think that is what superhero comics are good at teaching people and especially children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's not a matter of, even Batman is that way too. Like the best Batman comics aren't about the coolest gadgets he has. It's him using his intellect and sort of finding the strength within.
And doing so in a confident manner. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what strikes me as something that Spectre has like kind of come into his own with relatively recently.
Yes, right.
And that is very appealing when you're talking about a character who is like essentially a vigilante.
Yeah. Yeah.
He knows he can get shit done. He knows he's got issues, but he's going to do it his way. And damn it, he's going to do it his way, the right way every time.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But, you know, you need to have a lot of cool gadgets too.
Bunch of little moon things that go flying everywhere. That always helps.
Yep. Batarangs. Bat wings.
Right.
Marvel's Batman. Crazy Batman.
Has that always been the way that people reduced him? Or is that a more...
I think that was the intention.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, is that more of a kind of modern revisionist response?
No, that was the inception of the character. But, you know, you wouldn't want to have an exact allegory in the Marvel Universe as, you know, to try to copy Batman. But
right. I'm just thinking about the way that he was written, like, way, way, way a long time ago.
Yeah, I reread some of those issues recently, like the first volume stuff. And, like, previous things, like, stuff from, like, Werewolf by Night,
mm-hmm.
like, in his first appearances, or, like, some of the Marvel feature things aren't, or Marvel Spotlight is the other, when he shows up solo for the first time. The character isn't really fleshed out that way until volume one, so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's pretty consistent. In that way. And it's, I think it's also maybe why he never caught on. Like, people can identify with Batman a little differently because Batman's, in theory, not crazy. But I don't think people want to gravitate to a character who is admittedly knows he's, like, you know, not totally in touch with reality. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that doesn't, I was talking actually at the, with the owner of one of the local stores, and we were just talking about why people gravitate to certain characters and how Daredevil's the kind of the exception to the rule, because so many people like Daredevil, but it'd be, you know, we like characters we can kind of identify with and or look up to in certain ways, and Daredevil's the only one that's really popular that most people don't, because he's a blind man who has a serious disability that, you know, is still a superhero. And Moon Knight is similar. He has a disability in a lot of ways because of the mental health issues, but not nearly as popular either.
Right.
You know, these that always going to be resigned to a secondary character. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Makes it more interesting in my book.
It does. It's just their series don't last very long.
Right.
Which isn't so bad. I don't know. I mean, it's sad when series end, but at the same time, there's lots of comics to read, and it's kind of nice sometimes to have like a 12-issue run that's like really good.
Right.
And that, you know, we can then go and say, oh, you didn't read that? Because, you know, most people don't. And then you can, and you can sound really cool.
That's ultimately your end goal, right?
I mean, that is a big part of comics, is being the guy who read it or has the issues when no one else did.
That's not my approach to comics at all, but
that's cool. Yeah, that's why you're not going to have very good bragging rights when you go to San Diego.
There is, like, not even a remote possibility of me having bragging rights going to San Diego. There never, ever was. Are you kidding?
I know. This is why I wonder why you're even going.
Why are you being a dick? You told me that I was allowed to be excited about it and that you would support that excitement.
I am.
It's already, you've already like abandoned that.
We can split this show into two parts. Release part one this week. Save part two for next week.
You're looking for a loophole.
Yeah.
Some sort of dick loophole.
Right. I mean, this could come out at any time.
Yes. It's fine.
Dick Loophole's my private eye name, by the way. Want to move on to the next comic?
Yeah.
Hi, guys. It's at Jason Sachs. So, I had a little problem with this week's Nerd Confession, because I love to go against the conventional wisdom. I love to zig when other people zag, and my first instinct was to say that my favorite comic book series was something different from what many people, or at least Joe Patrick, call their favorite. But I couldn't. I love Starman. I love everything about the series. I love Jack Knight, the slacker 20-something who is forced to assume his father's superhero name, but who does so on his own terms. I love how Jack changes and grows, how his time as a hero helps him to build connections to his past and create gateways to his future. I love how Jack's time as a hero feeds his collecting obsessions and how that allows him to meet and hang out with some of his heroes, and even with Hellboy. Most of all, though, as a son, brother, and father myself, I've connected to the ways that Jack relates to his family. Jack's fascinating relationship with his brother, who is resurrected from the dead every year with deep and important lessons to pass on, always made me smile. The core of the book, though, is Jack's relationship with his father, Ted, the former JSA member Starman. Jack and Ted were never close at the beginning of the book, because they're very different, and so different that Ted barely understands Jack. But by the end, by that glorious, beautiful, perfect ending, Ted and Jack are as close as a father and son can be. What misunderstood adolescent doesn't dream of that kind of connection? You know, the ending brings tears to my eyes as I think about it. Excuse me while I go pull out my Starman omnibus and dwell on the wonderful world that James Robinson, Tony Harris, Peter Snaberg, and friends created. It's so beautiful. It's like an oval. Thanks. Bye.
Our second book this week is The White Suits number 4, written and lettered by Frank Barbieri and drawn and colored by Toby Cypress. The White Suits is published by Dark Horse Comics. This is the final issue in a 4-issue miniseries.
The mysterious White Suits savaged the Cold War Soviet underworld, then disappeared, only to resurface years later and declare war on New York's mobs. Hiring Russian mercenaries in a desperate counteroffensive, mob boss Darabont sets a trap in Chinatown, baited with amnesiac former suit Prizrak, a prisoner with rogue FBI agent Sarah Anderson, who has tied the suits to her father's disappearance in the USSR before the wall fell. Anderson offers to leak the location through her contacts to draw the suits in, who are eager to reclaim their former comrade. Darabont's plan appears to succeed until he realizes that the suits have what they want, their enemies in a single location. Darabont and his troops are slaughtered, and Prizrak is taken captive aboard a suit's helicopter. But where is Sarah Anderson? Dun-dun-dun!
Mm-hmm.
So every single group in this book thinks that they know what's going on.
Yeah.
They all think they have the answers. They all think that they are the shit and have the means to be on top.
Does that include the reader as well? Does it get meta like that?
No, I don't think it gets meta like that.
Okay.
But the government entity, the White Suits, I'm making a separation between those two.
Yes.
And then the actual, like, criminal, like, truce organization that comes about as a result of the White Suits. All of them think that they're going to be able to be the winners. It makes for some really awesome fight sequences.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, when everyone's right, everyone fights like they are the ones on the winning side.
Yeah, but it's so interesting that their tactics end up being very similar.
Yeah, but they also come from, even though they're different, they're on different sides, they're not different organizations, I guess, you know? It's like when your training is the same, you learn to fight the same. So, and this goes back to that kind of the show topic of the omnipotence is like, if you are on the side, like it's the villains versus the good guys, you know, the good guys win because the good guys are doing the good thing. Right. I mean, that's, that's typically what, how a comic plays out.
But like, who's the good guy?
Here? Well, in this case, right. That we don't know, but everyone is fighting like they are.
Well, right, because they all, yeah, yes.
But you know what I mean? Like, that makes for an interesting dynamic when it's, I think inherently in, like, a mainstream superhero comic, like, the Red Skull knows he's evil. And with that comes being bad and comes an inevitable defeat.
Sure, but that's like that's a whole separate kind of delusion of grandeur. Like, that's grandeur for, like, power's sake. So we're talking about repression as a means for being powerful. And we're talking about, like, that's a villain trope. I think that what's interesting in the white suits is that we have a secret government organization that should ostensibly be the good guy that is playing the role of the bad guy, right? Yeah. Like, that power becomes, like, the power corrupts, right? Like, that's a thing.
Sure, and revenge, like, revenge taints the mission or the cause.
Yeah, I guess Sarah's situation is a little bit more complicated because of the personal connection.
Yeah, it's not altruistic. It's
not at all.
It's to right, you know, a personal wrong.
But in that regard, like, she's just as out of touch with reality as the rest of them. And has, like, kind of lost herself in the process.
Yeah, I would say so, sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. Don't a lot of stories kind of teach us that revenge, it's, you know, it's whatever, it's biblical, you know, an eye for an eye.
What is that from?
Eye for an eye?
Yeah.
The saying is, an eye for an eye makes the whole world go blind. But that's not the, you know, the first part is the biblical line.
I've never heard the rest of that.
No, you haven't? That's, okay, now I have to look it up. That's
Gandhi. I'm looking it up right now. It's Gandhi. It looks like Exodus 21:24 for anybody playing along at home.
Yes.
And Matthew 5:38, so both Old and New Testament.
Oh, good. Yeah, an eye for an eye will make the whole world go blind is Gandhi.
Well done.
See? I know what I'm talking about sometimes.
The law of retaliation. It has to do with the...
Well, the biblical...
The retaliation that was actually authorized by law.
Yes. So, like, a thief would have his hand removed. Or, you know, everything is reciprocal.
Famous legal code written by Hammurabi, the principle of exact reciprocity is very clearly used. For example, if a person caused the death of another person, the killer would be put to death.
Yes, which I think a lot of people still agree is probably an acceptable form of, you know, punishment.
I think people who blindly say that have neither gotten caught nor have known anybody who has gotten caught for anything.
Of course.
And certainly have never set foot within the legal system.
I would probably agree, but that doesn't change that it's still a belief that's held by people.
Okay, well,
I'm not saying myself, because interpretation of the law is still we still have a human interpretation of legal matters,
right?
I don't know how we got into a legal discussion about,
well, because you mentioned retaliation and how that sort of taints the power structure, and that's certainly,
but we have a lot of revenge stories of, this happened to me, there was a wrong committed to myself or my family or on someone, you know, and I'm going to be the one to make it right because the legal system has failed. Mm-hmm. And we still gravitate towards those. You want to see that revenge, you know, happen.
Right. And Sarah's part of the legal system in that she's an FBI agent.
Yeah, but she stepped outside of her authority.
Right, right, right. But, like, she specifically says the entire motivation for getting involved with the FBI to begin with is what happened to her father. Like, the white suits killed her father. So now she's got to figure out what the fuck is going on with them and, like, right those wrongs.
Yeah.
But in order to do so, she has to step outside of her law enforcement role and approach it much more, like, from the criminal element. So maybe I take back what I said before. She's just as delusional as the rest of them.
Yeah.
Because that's not a rational approach to any...
No, but it's a cathartic one.
Sure, but those can be very mutually exclusive.
They can. Do you think... But is revenge a healthy response?
Do you want the right answer or do you want my answer?
No, I want your answer.
There have been times in my life where I really enjoyed being, like, vindicated in a way that you could probably categorize as a little bit of an evil kind of revenge situation.
Hmm. I'm not surprised by that.
Nothing violent, of course. More like somebody does something really shitty and you expose them for it and that feels good.
But that's different than revenge.
Are you kidding? If it's all rooted in the way that you were treated originally, and your motivation is to...
I guess just to see them suffer because of the injustice that happened to you.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. All right. Like, that's different. It's not that it shouldn't be taken care of anyway. It's that you are personally motivated to be involved in having it be taken care of because you were personally affected.
Okay, that's fair. So, right. Yeah. So even though it makes you a bad person too, the end result is good for society.
Does it? I mean, does it always?
I don't know.
Am I as delusional as all of these characters that we're talking about?
That's what I wonder. I mean, we have this sort of, I think we have this, we have these examples of, like, to go back biblical again, you know, turning the other cheek. You know, if you go now forward to Christ, you know, even if a wrong's visited upon you, you know, the people get their reward in the afterlife. It, you know, your job is to live your life well. And isn't that another aphorism? Like, the revenge is a life well lived or something like
or
that?
Or, like, the best revenge is...
Yeah, a life well lived. Yeah. And eating cold dishes. Maybe I'm mixing metaphors there. There's a lot of revenge stuff if you start thinking about it. Huh?
There is. There's a lot of like power structure, revenge, you know, mess around with said structure in order to exact your revenge. If something happens to you in this kind of story as a child, we have two female characters in this story whose lives are altered by the violence that they experienced in their childhood.
Yes.
And look at the way that they react differently to it. That's actually super interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you in that it feels really good to see someone else get what's coming to them, especially if they did it to you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily make us good people.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, we're bad people, but it still feels good.
But it would be incredibly dishonest to say that you didn't feel that way sometimes. Like, I don't mean you, Aaron Myers. I mean, like, humanity. There are probably very few people out there who have never had that kind of experience of being picked on or something, like, intentionally being done to them or against them. And you have an initial response to, like, wish ill on whomever did that to you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If it was something that was done intentionally. I don't just mean, like, you know, your life sucks so you hate the world.
Right.
I mean, like, you're doing your thing. You're doing the stuff you're supposed to do. You're going through life and you're, like, pretty much a good person. And then something happens intentionally to you. I don't know. Like, does it really make you like flip the switch to become a bad person because you want something bad to happen to the person that did that to you?
I don't know. I don't know if that's for us to decide. I know I would say looking at it from the above holier than thou view, yes, people would say the healthy response is not to wish that upon someone else, but I think the human response is to wish the same, which is why we have laws in place.
But it's interesting that you use the phrase holier than thou.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least in my book, that's not a positive connotation.
Sure.
That's.
Well, it's because we're all bad people and we don't like anyone who is good person.
I mean, like, if somebody told you that you were acting holier than thou, would you take that as a compliment?
It depends. Like,
no.
you want the real answer or the.
I want the real answer.
No, of course not, because it's not. It's meant to be an insult.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, but
see,
some people...
we actually all are totally delusional. We all think that we are better than we are. In reality, we're kind of all terrible.
Yeah, some of us are better than others.
Mostly me.
Well, let's talk about our last book.
Speaking of people who are super terrible.
Hey there, Aaron and Andrea. This is Chase Magnet, at Reverend Magnet on Twitter, and writer for Comics Bulletin and DC Infinite. You weren't kidding when you said this week's question was going to be a hard one, but I'm pretty sure I know the right answer for me. Back in 1987, John Ostrander and Luke McDonald began a series called The Suicide Squad. It ran for 68 issues with various crossovers and specials. With the help of Ostrander's wife, Kim Yale, it became something truly special. It was a character-driven story that took the fantastical aspects of the superhero genre and humanized them. They made Deadshot and Captain Boomerang into three-dimensional characters who you actually cared about. They also created a really diverse cast that is still ahead of its time at DC Comics. In addition to Ostrander's creation of Amanda Waller, Yale reinvented Barbara Gordon as Oracle in the series, taking a discarded member of the Bat family and transforming her into one of the first handicapped heroes in superhero comics. Even today, it's still inspiring great comics with Michelle Fife's excellent Copra. The series is still one of the best comics that DC has ever published, but what really makes it special for me is that it's the comic that hooked me. I found Suicide Squad number 6 on a quarter bin when I was only 13 years old and was blown away by what I was seeing. I was already a voracious reader, but this book showed me what comics are capable of. More than a decade later, and I'm still passionate about the comics medium, writing and reading about it every day. It was the first comic I collected, and the first comic I really loved. That's why Ostrander, McDonald, and Yale's Suicide Squad will always be my favorite comic series ever. Thanks, guys.
Our final book this week is Sheltered Number 10, written and lettered by Ed Brisson, and drawn by Johnny Christmas. Coloring is by Shari Shakama. Oh, man.
2 weeks in a row?
Yeah, well.
Two mispronunciations in a row.
Okay,
Why don't you just apologize?
I'm sorry. How do you say that last name?
Let's find out.
Oh, I see. You don't even want to try.
No, of course not. That's your game.
Uh-huh. Sheltered is published by Image Comics.
So, Sheltered is the pre-apocalyptic tale that Brisson and Christmas have been working on for like a year now, right? I mean, we're pretty far into this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group of families that have gathered to live out the apocalypse. However, they individually believe that may occur, right? And it's called Safe Haven. They believe civilization's collapse is imminent. They have stockpiled weapons, food, and supplies to survive the end of the world. But the one danger that they didn't count on was their own children. Under the leadership of the brash and charismatic Lucas, the children of Safe Haven slaughtered their parents. That's the premise of Sheltered. And since that, we've sort of seen Lord of the Flies style how this system has unraveled. There's a lot of anger, and there's a lot of like repressed anger and confusion about the choices that were made. And then Lucas's leadership has been challenged in a lot of ways. So there were some adults who recently came to Safe Haven to make a delivery that went disastrously. And so now we have Cliff, who's on the run He's like one of the adults from the kids. And we have Victoria and Haley and Tab, who are all, like, there are identifiable kids, right? They're the ones who know that Lucas is a fucking nut job and are trying to get away. And they have sort of an opportunity to do so now because of all of the chaos.
Sort of, yes.
Sort of. This is a hard book for me to read every month. We talked about it very briefly at the end of last year when we were making our year in review, like introspective lists. And you were the one that actually picked it. But I really, really enjoy it because it's so difficult. But holy shit, Lucas is the kind of character who's so committed and yet so wrong that it is like disturbing to know that there are people like that.
Well, yeah, he's a product of his upbringing.
Right.
I mean, he was raised as a survivalist no matter what. And I mean, it's somewhat crazy, but sort of he lived, you know, he grew up so isolated, and if you're indoctrinated with the world's going to end, resources are limited, you're going to have to make hard choices in the future. He made a hard choice.
Do you think that Lucas actually believes the stuff that he says?
I think so. Yeah. I think initially. I think that...
No, I don't mean initially and then he doesn't. I mean, yes or no. Right now, at the point in the story that we are...
No, he's trying to convince himself now. Huh. But his initial intentions, he believed what was going to happen. Like, the super volcano was going to erupt.
Right.
There wasn't enough resources for everyone. Their parents set up the safe haven for them to survive.
Mm-hmm.
He was helping them do that, and so that is quickly been stripped away.
Right, but he set everything in motion, and then all of the really deplorable acts since then have been to cover his tracks.
Yes, I mean, I think it's spiraled. It's been like, you know, it's a snowball.
Right. So I guess my question is, If you look at the initial decision or the initial conclusion that obviously the only thing that we can do is kill our parents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is coming from somebody who is, regardless of being raised in isolation, this is not a person who is well in the head, that would be your response.
Yes.
And then everything else.
By someone, by a leader, somebody who was raised as a leader. To carry forth, you know, the survivors of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think you
like
see
he
that.
Never had a chance.
Yeah, I think you see that in a lot of stories, though, that the leader has to make a hard choice.
That wasn't a hard choice. That was a fucked up choice that had no basis in reality.
Well, it had basis in the reality he was taught to believe in.
Not even he did. No. It didn't.
I don't know.
It was a constructed reality that he came up with because he...
I'm not an expert on, like, doomsday prepper people or anything, but...
Really? Really, Myers? Talk to me about what you have in your house right now.
I dabble in doomsday prepping. I'm a doomsday, like, maybe Dabber. I make it, like, the first couple of days after everyone else is wiped out.
You're a doomsday poser.
That's fine. I think that's an acceptable yet unfortunate title for me.
I will take my comics poser all the way to San Diego, and you can hang out in Oregon with your guns. It's going to be great.
Great. And rations. Well, you enjoy that super volcano that's going to erupt right below
the convention
center. I'm
going away from the volcano.
No, didn't you see, like, what was that movie? Like, Volcano, like, where there's a volcano erupts in, like, L.A. or something?
That's not a thing.
No. Or is it? Well, I guess we'll see. We'll see who's right.
I guess we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think I moved out of San Diego?
I don't know, because you don't like fun.
To get away from the super volcano underneath the convention center.
So Lucas, back to Lucas.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that he's unhinged. He's, but, you know, okay, so you take a... a child who grows up with pretty extremist parents, who may be also at an age where I don't think you're mentally that stable anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, with that, the in the height of puberty, the hormones are pretty make you pretty unstable.
Right.
And couple that with a constant stream of end of the world, you know, theories and blogs and reports, and put all that together, and you got a recipe for that kind of thing to happen.
You're giving him a lot less credit for this than
I could definitely get him acquitted.
Yeah, I don't know that I am comfortable with that. I think that he represents, like, the absolute most heinous perspective. I mean, I hate him in a way that I rarely hate fictional characters, because he is that guy who has the power and the charisma and has corrupted all of his followers and is just going to stop at nothing to cover his ass. And I find that frightening, and I find that disgusting, and I find that so fucking delusional, opposite of what humanity should be, that the idea that you could get him acquitted because of his upbringing makes me sort of nauseous.
Well, that goes back to the legal system, but I think we've seen plenty of trials where people get acquitted on much thinner, you know, theories and you know, arguments on mental instability.
Awful.
But I think in his case, there's an actual legitimate case to be made too.
So you sympathize with him.
I don't sympathize with the act. I understand how it could come about.
Hmm.
It doesn't justify it. But okay, look at it from this approach. What if he was right? What if this story wasn't about him, like the kids killing their parents and now trying to, you know, maintain some sort of order? What if they killed their parents and an hour later the supervolcano erupts? Then how would you think of him?
I think I'm still going to go with this "it's not okay to kill your parents" route.
Well, what happens? I think we have historical examples of what happens when a group of people becomes cut off from resources.
Yes, we do. Some of which are pretty disgusting in their own right.
I think they were all pretty disgusting. I mean, like,
right.
the Himalayan soccer team, you know, the book Alive, yeah, you know, yeah. Based around that.
Like, I was pretty sure you were going to go with the Donner Party.
Well, the Donner Party is the example to share about what happens when you don't have any food. Like, at least they had corpses to eat, you know, in the Himalayas. Otherwise, what would have happened?
But you're still removing the individual choice. So he gets to kill his parents. He sits down with his parents and he says, "I've come to the conclusion that the only way to save myself is to kill you." And they all have like a little chit chat about it. And they all agree that that's the right choice. Fine. He removed that choice from everybody else. And that's what makes him despicable.
But isn't that the role of a leader, to make the choices that
others
can't?
Oh my fucking God, Aaron. Are you kidding? No, no, no. That's not the role of a leader at all. That's why it's... No, no.
Oh, you see, you're not approaching this from a militaristic sort of view.
Surprise.
Right, but there, it's also I want to look back at this, the scenario of, yes, the end of the world has come. You know, people everywhere now are cut off, they're dying. You know, they are in the camp and they're the last hope of humanity.
Okay.
The outside world is a threat. Their resources are dwindling.
Fair enough.
Right.
I have read stories like that where the adults get together and the adults say, "We are going to sacrifice ourselves for our children. We are going to do this so that the future can be like a thing."
Sure.
You cannot make that decision for anybody else.
Well, then somebody's going to make it for you. So you're saying either... So his parents would get... So it's... People get to decide if they will give up their lives for the betterment of the group.
Yeah, yeah, I'm totally saying.
I agree. I think that would be the right approach. I also think at his decision to speed up that process isn't so far-fetched from reality.
Oh my god. Does really?
It? Yeah. It's not, I'm saying, it's not something I agree with. I understand.
Quick, let me throw out this caveat here so no. Andrew doesn't think I'm a fucking sociopath.
No, I'm not saying it's right or good. I'm just saying I understand. So I understand how he could get that? To that point. No. I don't know. Actually, I don't know. I've never been starving. I've never been to the point of deciding, or I've never, but I'm just saying, you're asking, could I do that? You have to think of the scenarios that could bring you to having to make a decision like that.
Could you proactively, on a whim, decide to take the life of half of the people that you were with?
No, but I also wasn't raised to think of living in a world like that.
Fair enough.
So I don't have the training to think that way.
If only you had a better...
This is why I'm a doomsday poser, not a prepper.
Right.
We've already established this.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, did we learn a lot this week?
Oh, my God. I was just about to say, I've learned so much about you.
See, there you go.
Yeah. Damn. I need some sort of palate cleanser. I'm going to go watch Community. I am going to just do that and feel much better about the world.
Good luck.
Why? What do you know that I don't know?
Nothing. I'm just saying.
What?
All right. No. Well, let's end the show. How do we end this normally when we don't have a guest? Blah blah blah. Comicstherapy.com. Blah blah blah. Order your comics.
Don't forget to order your books. Don't forget to subscribe to them online. All of the show notes and other information that you need, including the pictures from Nick and I last week, are at comicstherapy.com.
Also, get ready for the super volcano. Don't kill your parents unless you have to.
Yeah. I'm so sad now. I'm like super bummed out.
Talk to you next week. Try to be best because you're only a man and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe though the going gets rough that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself. Try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
Hey, it's Random Shane calling you about the best series ever. That really wasn't that hard. The first thing that popped in my head, I have to go with, it was the West Coast Avengers / Avengers West Coast from 1985 to 1994. The reason's pretty simple. I'll keep it short. It was one of the first monthly titles that I collected. I started around issue 50, so I could go back and collect all the previous issues, and they were dirt cheap. I love the underdog aspect of the team, and of course, Hawkeye is one of my favorite characters. And when it was canceled, I wrote in to Marvel, and had my first letter published. And it was in the Forceworks follow-up, their gritty 90s reboot. But it was just an awesome series for 102 issues. So, thanks.